It's 2:25 a.m. in San Junipero, and you're listening to Night Call. Welcome to Night Call, a podcast to keep you company on those strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida, and I am in New York City. And with me on the other line in Los Angeles, I have
Molly Lambert.
And Tess Lynch.
And we were just moments before hitting record here, kind of gaping collectively, bicoastally over the new Janelle Monáe video that just came out a few hours ago for Make Me Feel. That's the song. Hence the San Junipero reference. It is basically a kind of, I don't know. It's a light tribute, but it's just amazing. It's her and Tessa Thompson in a neon-colored club with, like, Prince guitars. And it's just fantastic, and I'm really glad that there is a new Janelle Monáe piece of music and visual in the world, because it feels like it's been way too long.
Welcome back.
All right.
Sorry, guys.
That's our collective message for Janelle Monáe, I guess.
I love Janelle Monáe. I actually, she was my daughter's favorite guest on Sesame Street. She did a very high impact song about fixing your mistakes, getting it right.
I don't think I've seen that, but I can imagine her being just like a perfect Sesame Street guest. She's just got this like energy. It's like her center of gravity is like right in like the middle of her body, so it makes her kind of like this, like, I don't know, there's something about her that just feels very suited to, like,
she's bouncy
Elmo arms.
She looks bouncy.
Yeah, she's got that Muppet body.
Yes.
Yeah,
body movement.
Great. Hey, speaking of music videos, I happen to see a really good music video for Speedy Ortiz's Lucky 88 that I think was directed by a friend of ours, Molly.
Hey, good segue, Tess.
Anytime.
Where did you see the music video?
I saw it on the internet.
Whoa. Oh, my God.
So, Emily, spoiler alert, that you directed and produced, or just directed? I forgot.
I directed and produced.
It was incredible.
There's a very Black Mirror-y, a jokey Black Mirror storyline, and some excellent practical effects. And
yeah,
Tess and I want to know everything about the slime practical
effects. Well, first of all, who came up with the concept?
So I kind of got the gig a little bit last minute. And all I knew was that they kind of wanted something in the neighborhood of Riverdale and Black Mirror. That was what I was told. Like,
nice.
Kind of like, I think like the color palette of Riverdale more like. Mm. And I was like, oh great, that is my address, the intersection of Riverdale and Black Mirror. I would love to do something.
Did you see that Greg Araki directed a Riverdale?
No, I didn't see that. I've not been watching this season.
It'll
I feel
be
like
there.
It's going to be waiting for me someday when I am sick.
It's
or
waiting
like
for
that.
You like a milkshake at Pop.
Yeah.
Pop's Chocolate Shop.
But yeah, so I kind of tossed around some ideas. I mean, I would have loved to do like a high school set. My original idea was something that was like set in a high school, and then it just felt like it was going to be too logistically complicated.
Dealing with teens. You don't want to deal with teens.
Yeah. It was funny. I was going back and thinking about it, and I was like, so I spent a very satisfying summer reading 2 out of 3 of the Valis trilogy, the Philip K. Dick books, and the third one is the Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch. And the idea of it is that colonists on Mars are so bored that they take this drug where they basically get to live this alter ego life, and they can buy these like they can buy objects to have in their drug state.
Or Second Life.
Yeah, it's basically like Second Life, except it's induced by drugs. And so everybody can't wait to get like the latest sweater for their choosy experience, and or no, it's not choosy, it's candy. Candy is the first one, and everybody becomes either the women become somebody named Perky Pat, and so that was sort of like the persona was like Perky Pat for Sadie, and then the slime. I was just like, I think I had read this Junji Ito comic dissolving classroom over Christmas, mm-hmm. and I was just really entranced with the idea of doing something with slime. And luckily, slime is the hottest thing right
now.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. I thought you were just riding the slime wave.
No. I wasn't. And then I realized, oh, yeah, this is like every time it kind of pops up, maybe on your suggested views.
Yeah, it's always on suggested videos like, hey, would you like to watch somebody like poke at some slime?
Heard you like slime.
I do.
Yeah. And it's so funny because, you know, I was like trying to find somebody to just like manage the effects during it. And, everybody who was kind of like working on the video was like, oh, I mean, like, you know, if they could work 12-hour days, I would just call my cousin or something because they like make these huge, vast quantities of slime.
Yeah, that's what I was
going
to say when you were like, hey, do you know anyone who makes slime? And I was like, who doesn't make slime these days?
I mean, this is definitely a post-election phenomenon, is that everybody got really into like manufacturing large quantities of slime.
It was like right after fidget spinners, it was the next thing.
Right. Well, slime is a cyclical thing.
Because it's supposed to be therapeutic.
Though. Yeah.
Because remember in the 90s, there was slime, there was GAC. I was actually just looking.
We were into slime.
We were super into slime. But there was like this whole list of Nickelodeon different kinds of slime and putties and things, and some of them have been discontinued, others remain.
They're like people buy anybody them. Remember Flome?
Exactly.
I feel like the making your own is new, and that's the thing that I like to watch videos of. I just like used that to explain to somebody what ASMR was.
Oh, slime. Yeah.
I was like, you know, it's like when people make those videos of slime where they like squish the slime,
they squelch slime.
Yeah. And they were like, oh, yeah, I've watched those.
Well, there's also a big snail mucin cosmetics movement, and I think that just kind of like it's
snail
a slime
masks.
Yeah, slime becomes a part of your daily life.
Do you think we're just in like the mucus age?
I think we are. I think people are ready to get gross. That was kind of my feeling in doing it. Is like I think that there is kind of a reactionary to maybe the hyper controlled like global Airbnb aesthetic of everything now, which is also what the video has in it. It's like people just want to see things get covered in slime and goop. And
it was
like,
really nice to watch that happen.
It was. It's also an earworm. It's such a good
It's a great song. Something about the sushi covered in slime really like did something weird to my brain. So, good job,
Emily. Yeah, nice job, Emily.
Thank you. Hopefully I have a chance to do that in a long form fashion.
Yeah. I mean, I think The Blob is like one of the scariest horror movies of all time.
It totally is. I watched a bunch of The Blob for this. I watched, obviously, Repo Man was like a big influence on it. But The Blob is so scary and it's all these practical effects and it's so nasty. And it kind of reminds me of a movie that's coming out this week that hopefully we'll talk about next week that also has some very nasty.
Oh, yeah.
Both practical and digital effects, but it's just like gross.
Tess, any more slime thoughts?
I'm wondering, I was sitting here musing, wondering whether cosmetic kind of booms, like when people are really interested in multi-step skin rituals and cosmetics, if that correlates at all with people's fascination with slime.
I do think so. You know why? Because there have been some really slime-like face masks
coming out. The bubble masks.
There's like the ones with glitter, and then I saw a really grotesque one that was like just the imagery is grotesque. It's like Dr. Jart, like shake and shot that Cara Brown was like trying out that seemed... It seems really fun to do, like whether or not it actually does anything to your skin. It's like so weird looking. But then I'm always like, what if it got stuck on your face?
Well, there's one. I think it's like, what, the Hanacure mask? I obsessively read about this stuff, but I don't really use it. But there's one that like tightens your face so much that it makes you look very old. And then you rinse it off and it's like your face is really tight. And then there are these bubble clay masks that kind of foam when they come in contact with like the oils on your skin. But I wonder if it's, you know, being in contact with these kind of goopy goos, if you start kind of like becoming more fascinated with that texture because it's kind of like insinuated, it's oozing like, into your life.
It's like we're simulating a stress response that like animals like snails and anybody else have, which is like if you're stressed out, you create a gooey layer to protect you from the rest of the world.
Yes.
I feel like that is what's going on here. I mean, it's the same with like mucus. If you have allergies or something and you get mucusy, like that's the same thing.
I feel like it's just like a melting time. Like everything's melting. The world is melting.
So you think that the goo and the slime is a comment on global warming?
That's valid. Oh, it is, though. It totally... No, because that is, like, also the other pitch from Sadie. I mean, the song is kind of meant to be about this thing of just, like, being so fed up or, like, you know, being so fed up with how much conflict and, like, stress and stuff is going on. But meanwhile, everything is, like, you know, the world is going to die a slow heat death, etc. And yeah, so that was like definitely there from the start of the video was the slime being global warming.
Speaking of global warming briefly, Martha Stewart has been on a polar journey that I feel was directly inspired by Night Call.
Definitely.
Great.
She's at the South Pole and she's been posting the most amazing photographs of like ice formations from a tiny 10-person boat called the Zodiac.
Wow. Yes, that she is. She's a Night Call fan.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
She's very
is she
goth.
Is she a Toski? Is she an Avery or is she
She might be like a Zodiac.
I think she is.
That's yeah, true.
Gave you all
she's
the
very
clues.
I love her goth Instagram. It's so goth. It's very like she posted this picture once of like a donkey eating a coyote and everybody was like, "Wow." And she was like, "It's the brutality of
chaos
nature."
She's Herzog.
Speaking of our other Night Call listeners, I think that we have some listener questions that we were going to tackle.
We'll go like doodly 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 dood.
So we received a bunch of really great voicemails and emails this week, and it was really hard to choose from the good questions that we got.
And if you have a call for us, you should give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT.
That's right, Emily. Or you can always email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
Drop us a line.
Let's have a voicemail, guys. Let's kick it off.
Hey, Night Callers. This is Ben Howard from North Hollywood, California, walking the dog on the cold, not-so-rainy streets of North Hollywood. Here with a question for you. Me and my friend Linda were talking. She's a huge Harrison Ford fan, big crush on the man, particularly classic era Ford. And we had a good question. What year was Harrison Ford the hottest? Like, what single year was he just looking for the absolute best in the hottest roles? And we settled on 1983. That's the year where Temple of Doom was being filmed, and turns out it comes out. If you Google Harrison Ford 1983, there's a particularly hot image of him. These sunglasses, he just looks unreal. So, you know, maybe you guys don't think Harrison Ford's hot, and, you know, I will stop listening to this podcast. You do think that. But, you know, just answer the question. Who would be the hottest? What do you guys think? Sorry for the background.
I'm actually Googling.
I Googled 1983. Molly, did you?
No, I Googled Harrison Ford's IMDb, and I'm looking at all of his credits now to decide when he was the hottest. First of all, we obviously all think Harrison Ford is hot. Obviously, I'm saying, assuming everyone else is on board.
I think he is hot. He is also one of the rare actors that I would say has not gotten better with age. I think when he is young, he is the hottest.
Well, that's a hot take that most people get hotter as they age. Were you just saying he's the exception where he was hotter young? Or were you saying the opposite? Okay.
Most actors that I find physically appealing, I like at least equally across all their different aging periods. And
I thought you were saying he like leveled off as an actor at a certain point, like he plateaued in terms of talent, which I do kind of maybe think is true.
Yeah. I mean, not it's not a lie.
I'm going to really quick say that if you do Google Harrison Ford 1983, which now obviously everyone who's listening has to Google, he had a really bad beard and mustache choice around that time.
Yeah.
And it's thrown in with the other images, and it honestly kind of ruins 1983 for me.
It looks you're right.
You know what I mean?
Here's what I'm going to say. I think 1983 is a good choice because that's like you're between Indiana Jones, you're after Star Wars. You're right at Blade Runner. But I'm going to go controversial and say 1988 is the last time I found Harrison Ford very hot, because that's when he's in Working Girl.
Oh, yeah. He is very attractive in Working Girl, and he's an asshole in Working Girl, too.
He's like a hot, yuppie dick. Oh. He's so good. And right after that is Last Crusade, and I feel like already by Last Crusade I'm out again.
Right. Yeah. I'm gonna tell you guys that I think Harrison Ford, 1993.
Ooh, go on.
Whoa.
I'm talking okay. Fugitive Harrison Ford. This is the reason being that I feel like he was at a point in his life, in his career, where he was so serious. And it was like almost like a repellent kind of seriousness. He's mean and he's on the run and like he was, you know, a victim. I felt like there was more complexity for me and he was more accessible to me in The Fugitive. Maybe I prefer people who are like, who look like they have suffered a lot.
He didn't kill his wife.
He didn't kill his wife, yeah. But boy, you know. He almost should have at that point.
I just saw that everything. Movie for the first time.
It's a fantastic movie.
Very good.
It's a really good movie.
The Fugitive. That's Night Call's recommendation
The Fugitive.
For the week. Emily, when do you think Harrison Ford...
Don't try and skirt the question, Emily.
...was the most hot?
My favorite Harrison Ford is Joan Didion's Carpenter Harrison Ford.
Oh, zip.
Slider.
That's above and beyond my favorite. Those pictures of him at their beach house in Ventura are like both idyllic because the house looks beautiful and the life just looks incredible.
And he's like smoking a joint, building a deck, and you're just
he's
like,
wearing these flannel shirts, building their fucking deck. It's just like kind of stereotypical. Like female fantasy, but also just so
what,
it feels so
deck?
Specific. Harrison Ford to build, yes, obviously, surrounded by succulents.
Yeah,
in the Central Coast.
I have to tell you, I have a deck, and like occasionally the animal noises coming from under the deck. I'm just like, what's the point of a deck? It's like you build fake ground on a platform above perfectly good ground, and you create this space of unknowns.
Well, you better watch out, because Harrison Ford might be living
Yeah, I think Ford circa his deck habitation.
Is there pot smoke, like, wafting out from under the...
No,
probably possum. Under your deck.
Being, like, a stoner carpenter and then, like, meeting... you know, every single director in the course of your job and becoming Harrison Ford movie star feels like such a, I mean, it's like kind of, I don't know, kismet-y in a way that I don't feel like happens anymore, but it's also like the ultimate like attractive boy privilege story.
Well, he's a very good actor because he doesn't seem actorly, which obviously really hard to do. And the person I always compare him to in my head, because I'm a million years old, is Joel McRae, who was another like guy who grew up in LA and just like became an actor, but like had worked on a ranch where you're like, wow, that seems like they found that guy on like a ranch, like building a deck, and now he's in a movie.
But do you think Harrison Ford has a sense of humor?
I mean,
I'm concerned. I don't know.
Funny is maybe not his thing, now that you mention it. I mean, Indiana Jones has a sense of humor.
That's the thing, is he tricks you into thinking he does, but I've never seen Harrison Ford like really cracking. But it's possible I've missed something.
Now he's in the like the Taken zone.
Yeah.
He's like an angry father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe that's me. Honestly, maybe I just revealed that that's like, you know, the beginning of his angry father phase.
Oh,
was
that's
the attractive
what you like.
Phase.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's what
Emily,
I like in
Emily
general.
Emily likes him like unmolded clay.
I like him looking, you know, fresh and young.
Full of potential.
Hey, guys.
You know, actually, I think my real answer might be that I think he's the most hot in American Graffiti.
Yeah.
He's just like kind of
that's
a cameo.
That's the most unmolded. Yeah.
Oh, he's so... That's when you're just like, this guy should be the biggest movie star in the world because he's shining. He's just so hot. He's like McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. He just like, maybe that's just my fantasy for someone hot to like pull up in a car.
Well, thank you, caller, for this question, which has inspired, I feel like, the liveliest, horniest debate so far on Night Call.
Good Night Call.
We're only a few episodes in.
I'm not saying that it is the high water mark and it's all downhill from here. I'm just saying that thank you for bringing us to this level because it's great.
Today's episode is sponsored by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers your favorite step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. We've all tried HelloFresh here at Night Call. My favorite thing about it was not having to plan dinner because when I get in that dinner slump where I just cannot figure out what to do, it ends up being like hours and hours. And then I just end up either eating just bread or getting takeout that I didn't really want. So with HelloFresh, you get to try new recipes that aren't already in your repertoire. It's nothing that you're sick of. It's stuff you haven't tried. Everything's delivered to your door in recyclable and insulated packaging. The recipes only take about 30 minutes, so you won't spend forever in the kitchen, and you can choose between three plans, classic, veggie, or family. I ordered the veggie box because I'm pretty sad about how much meat I eat, and I also have no idea how to cook vegetarian meals, so I needed some help. I made orecchiette pasta with mushrooms and asparagus, and it was the jam. It was easy, filling, and something I probably wouldn't have thought to make on my own. If you'd like to give it a try and receive $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter promo code CALL30. Again, that's HelloFresh.com with promo code CALL30 for $30 off your first week of HelloFresh. You guys, can I request that we talk about the film Mother, even though it's not timely?
Oh, boy, can you?
Because so I've been wanting to see Mother for a really long time. I wanted to watch it at home because that's how I prefer to watch my Aronofsky movies. And I couldn't see it for a really long time because I cut my eyeball. And
oh, right.
Right. Ooh.
Can you tell us more about how you cut your eyeball?
You don't want to know, really.
I do want to know.
So, like, years ago, my son was a toddler, and he was gesticulating. He was telling a story, and one of his bad parents hadn't cut his fingernails in a bit, and he accidentally sliced my eyeball. Whoa. And, uh-huh. And then, but then it healed. I got a contact lens bandage, but then I scratched my eye, like, itched my eye, and it really hurt. And I thought, like, I must have some sand in my eye or something. And eventually, like, long story short, there had always been some kind of roughness left over from the first injury, and then it, like, reopened on the – I'm so sorry if you're eating something right now, or even if you're just having a body.
So
or
bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. It was a terrible experience.
It's a good body horror lead-in to
Mother.
Well,
that's the thing, is I was like, all I want to do is watch Mother because I know it's just going to be this, like, carnival of body horror, but I can't – and – the way that they try to speed up healing with your eye is they put a placental bandage on. So it's like a slice of freeze-dried, like, placenta, amniotic cells, I don't know. And then
that's the contact eye?
They put that on, and then they put the contact lens on top to try to facilitate healing. But whether it was the idea of this or there was something in it that my eye didn't like, it was like I got home and I thought I'll be fine. And almost 10 minutes after I got home, I had to be rushed back to the eye doctor, and it was just a nightmare. They had to give me, like, Valium.
You said it was your body rejected
the placenta?
It rejected the placenta. So it was the plot of Mother, but I couldn't see Mother.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've also, like, given birth a couple times, so you've, like...
Yeah, I am a mother, exclamation point,
yeah,
exclamation.
You've seen a body mother! Be inside out.
Yeah.
So I would think the placenta on the eye would just be after that, just like a, yeah, like, nothing.
I just like that you, like, high on your list once your eye accepted the placenta and you could see again and your vision wasn't at risk. Mm-hmm. You were like, time to watch Mother. This is what these
Let's
things
sink
were
our
for.
Teeth in a mother. Yeah. What did you guys think of Mother?
I loved mother? How much Molly hated Mother before she hadn't seen it. She was like really out there, like, vocally anti-mother, and then she saw it and she was like, I love Mother.
Everyone should know by now that my thing is vocally taking a position and then completely changing my mind and being really annoying if you're like, well,
you didn't just change your mind, you just hadn't seen the movie.
No, I was just like, this sounds bad because it's an allegory and I hate allegories.
Oh my God, I fucking hated this movie. Are you
tell
kidding
me why?
I can't believe that it's even worth arguing about. Like, it's just, it's something, I was just shocked at how many people thought that there was something, like, even people who are like, it's not good, but it's fun to talk about. No, it's not fun to talk about. It's just like a college kid stab at fucking, like, profundity about, like, it's the Bible, but it's also Mother Earth.
Okay, but let's say you don't take any of the allegory at its face value as being about Mother Earth, because it's obviously just about Darren Aronofsky dating Jennifer Lawrence.
That was my preferred read.
And on that note, it was like really interesting.
Yeah, it was, I mean,
yeah.
He was like, okay, it's kind of about global warming at one point. I think he spoke with IndieWire and answered some questions.
He literally, I was at the premiere of it in New York City, humble brag, at Radio City Music Hall. It's not a humble brag because I didn't have a good time. And... there's like another fun anecdote from this event. But before it started, he came out and introduced the film. And you should never have Darren Aronofsky introduce his own film because he will ruin it.
Oh, no.
And he was like, you know, I just want to say that this movie is about all mothers, but it's also about our mother. And then like dropped the mic and walked off. And I was like, boo.
Is this also where he handed out like that weird prayer card?
The prayer card by...
The prayer.
Yeah. Was it Rebecca Solnit?
Look,
I'm
only hating Mother's on handing prayer. out a prayer card at all. It's not the content of the prayer card. It's the pairing of a prayer card with a movie.
Look, you have to separate the art from the artist, guys.
oh, now we do?
No, but I feel like this is a topic we will continue to explore throughout this podcast, is people you might not like making things you like sometimes.
I kind of thought, I was like, my first impression of Mother was I was like, oh, it's about capitalism, which I guess is how I come at everything that seems like dense at this point. Because I'm like, when I read the corrections, I was like, I love this book. It's about birth order. And then I was like, wait, it's about capitalism? So now I just assume everything is about capitalism. But I was like, oh, see, she married this idealist who's an artist, but now that she's pregnant and a homeowner, she's kind of a NIMBY, and she doesn't want him to invite in the new ideas because all of a sudden they threaten her safety, and then she's having to deal with her own decay, and the house's decay, the inevitable decay. And I got really into that, and then I was like, oh, it's about global warming, but I'm not going to let it take that away from me because I still believe I'm right on some level.
Yeah, I feel like it's like one of those movies where I don't feel guilty at all just being like, it's about whatever I think it's about, because I thought Jennifer Lawrence was really good, and it was like a good parable of like ingenues in Hollywood. And I also really like Black Swan.
I love Black Swan.
See, this is the thing. I'm not anti. You are more anti Aronofsky than I am.
Well, I thought Jennifer Lawrence gave a better performance in Mother than Natalie Portman did in Black Swan. Personally, I don't know. I thought she was good.
She just had to be freaked out and scream and then get like the shit beat out of her at the end, which was like so awful.
She did a lot of painting.
She just wanted to paint and brace the sink.
Yeah, the sink.
Brace that sink.
Also, it was just like, it was hilarious.
It was so, the best part of the movie for me is when all of these terrible house guests keep coming through and she's in a room and this older gentleman comes by and like tries to come into the room and she's like, what are you doing? He's like, sorry, I was just exploring. And I just laughed so hard for some reason because I was like, this is such a slice of life. This is cinema verite. Because it's like, can you imagine how horrible that would be if someone just came into your house and came into your bedroom and they're like, just exploring?
Well, that was like obviously trying to be very Rosemary's Baby. Yes. Just like all the weirdos are taking over in your space.
The most recent time for me that Mother came up was a friend of mine works in film production, and she was on some shoot, and she was in a production van and like having a really bad time because she was, I think, the only woman on the production and was just stuck in this van.
And she decided to check out a lighthearted comedy called Mother?
No, it's just that all the guys in the van, well, first she had to overhear like a whole thing about how like, do women really want to be cinematographers though? Like this whole discussion, like dumb sexist like discussion between a bunch of like white film bros. Ew. And then it got to how Mother was the best movie of 2017 and it was better than Moonlight.
Hold that against Tess and I liking Mother.
Yeah.
No, I know. I'm just saying that, like, that this is, I was just like, get out of the car. This isn't a safe space anymore.
I'm just saying, like, I like a lot of things that, like, film bros like, and, like, they can still be wrong and I can still like them, you know?
No,
like,
totally. I'm just
I
saying
like
that.
Fight Club.
Yeah. My husband said.
You know what Fight Club's about?
Yeah.
Is it capitalism?
It is.
It's my true. Husband did not like Mother, and he insisted
he
that...
He didn't?
No, he didn't like Mother.
Really?
Yeah. I think he had high expectations and mine were low, but he then made us watch the episode of Twin Peaks, Got a Light, I think.
Episode 8?
It's, oh, God. It's so scary.
It's 8 or 3. It's the one with a lot of nuclear bombs.
It's the black and white one. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, see, this is Mother, but better. And I was like, oh, for me, it's not at all. It's not at all like Mother, but better.
I mean, I think the end of Mother is like a silly mess. Again, yeah. Like, I did have low expectations for it that I was just sort of like laughing and enjoying seeing a movie.
It's supposed to be funny.
It's supposed to be funny. The end when there's like people chanting like "Si si puede" or something, I was like, you don't know what you think this is about, which is why you're just going to tell everyone it's about global warming.
Like, I really appreciate there being movies like Mother, because I'm like, this kind of failed, but I really enjoyed it. And I also, it made me think like, well, I just want every filmmaker to make their kind of Mother, where they just kind of lose their train of thought, but they have to keep finishing it and keep going.
Yes,
and it should make it weirder.
Yeah. That's the only aspect of Mother that I like, is that it was a Paramount release, which is like very meta. Right, I was like,
somebody let him make this. It's like a big budget, silly, like trying to make a Bergman movie. Well, it's like he's trying to make a Lars von Trier movie.
This is the thing. Mother is not that extraordinary for how weird it is. Like, there's tons of weird shit out there. It's just interesting because it's a Paramount. It was a large scale, like, award season release by a major studio. That is interesting and weird and doesn't happen all the time.
Because it was about, like, a weird, the director-actress relationship and how fucked up it is.
But he also tried to deny that, I think.
Well, that's because he doesn't want to talk about it.
That's because it's what it totally was about.
Reading he would want of
Yeah. The whole thing was so worshipful of Jennifer Lawrence. And
she looks amazing.
She glows. And the way that the camera follows her, it's like she's floating a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And it was just, I thought that was interesting because like he does kind of put her through these like humiliations and tortures. And it reminds, you know, he has a penchant for doing that with especially actresses, but also as actors. And so it seemed like a very self-aware commentary on like, how he loves them and he respects them and he like distorts it
and about like dating like male artists who are like also insecure that are like,
and he, I think Javier Bardem's character is written to be so silly. I mean, like, so that was the poems the poems he'd recite. I mean,
but again, I was like, I know real poets and they are just as silly and serious about what they do,
like, you know, giving a speech at a dinner, like a funeral for someone you didn't really know, and just it's
That was a real sitcom setup.
Yeah, it was.
This episode of Night Call is brought to you by Audible, the leading provider of premium spoken audio content and entertainment. And Audible is great because you can switch between devices without losing your place, get a credit every month good for any audiobook in their store, and the books are yours to keep, so you always have access to your favorites. Today, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. So just go to audible.com/call and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a free title and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audible.com/call or text CALL to 500500 to get started. That is call to 500500. Audible content includes a huge selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, and business information providers.
Yes, I personally recommend pairing George Saunders or H.G. Wells with Tetris because it is the best experience ever. But you also wouldn't be wrong if you wanted to listen to Sarah Vowell's Lafayette and the Somewhat United States in the car. It has special guests, John Slattery, Nick Offerman, Bobby Cannavale, and a ton of others. They do have like a really huge selection, and it's pretty awesome if you're playing video games that you can mute. So I highly recommend those things. I think that we should devote a minute to Frasier, but this week we're going to have a different kind of Frasier minute.
That's right.
We're going to talk about Brendan Fraser. Fraser minute.
It's the Brendan Fraser. I think it's still Fraser.
I was struggling with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is still Fraser.
There was a really great profile of Brendan Fraser and where he's been that was in GQ. Zach Barron wrote it, right? Yeah, I think Zach Barron wrote it. It was a very well-written profile, I thought, because it's packed a lot of suspense in. And among the kind of revelations was that Brendan Fraser kind of stepped back from the spotlight after an incident at the 2003 Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Oh, the head of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association groped Brendan Fraser at a party. He, like, grabbed his ass and then, like, put his whole hand in, kind
of. Yeah, I think that the guy admitted to it in a book, and he says he squeezed his ass, and then Brendan Fraser was like, no, that's not what happened.
He said, like, he grabbed my taint.
Yeah.
And then the guy has denied it since then.
Yeah.
But Brendan Fraser was just like, oh, yeah, it really fucked me up. And he just talked about how, like, throughout his career, he, like, made movies. The reason he did so much physical comedy was because he was, like, a masochist and wanted to, like, put his body through the ringer in all these ways. And then he, like, fucked his body up real bad. And he said he, like, put himself back together with, like, Band-Aids and ice packs all the time when he was filming. Like,
what movies fucked him up?
The Mummy.
The Mummy, yeah.
He just, like, kept doing movies with, like, more and more stunts and more stuff that involved, like, and then he said, like, the climax was he was in this, like, bad Looney Tunes movie where he had to punch himself in the face.
Well, wasn't he he was playing his stunt double.
Yeah.
It was really, it was a confusing setup.
The end of postmodernism. Exactly. Was definitely that movie. Yeah, it was like he was playing himself and he had to, like, punch himself in the face, and he was just saying how he, like, really wanted to get it right, and then he, like, punched himself in the face really hard and was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And now he lives with, like, some horses.
Yeah, he brought home a horse from a shoot from Mexico, I think, and brought home the horse because he felt like he made this, like, instant connection with the horse.
He compares himself to the horse from Animal Farm. It's a very sad interview all in all, but he's like, yeah, you know, the horse in Animal Farm that's like the proletariat that just works and works and works, and then it's like body breaks down and it realizes it's like shouldn't have done all the stuff it was told to do. Like, that's me and this horse that I rescued.
He's always been so interesting because acting teachers, in my experience, having taken some acting lessons that didn't work out very well, but they often cite him as one of their favorite actors, which always seemed kind of weird because you're like, The Mummy? Like, was it
he's
that?
A good comedian.
But he's great. He was in I didn't realize that his first role was in Dogfight.
Since this article has come out, I feel like everybody's been like, oh, I like Brendan Fraser. I have, like, nice memories of Encino Man, you know?
Oh, Encino Man's so good.
He's very likable. And again, I feel like Chris Pratt, everyone's like, oh, Chris Pratt is, like, people trying to make another Brendan Fraser slash make a new Harrison Ford, and it just, like, doesn't work. Because it's, like, superficially the same things, but, like, no whatever that unknown quality is that makes
it. Brendan Fraser still came off as a movie star, though. And I think that the Chris Pratt thing is that I always think of as the male equivalent of Jennifer Lawrence, where it's like, this could be you, except he's, like, a little more attractive, but still seems like somebody.
But Jennifer Lawrence
you would know
seems,
or could be.
Jennifer, like, Lawrence seems, like, funny and cool. Yeah. And Chris Pratt to me seems like somebody I would, like, not like at all in real life.
See, but I think the people who are meant to, like, be his demographic do think he seems
I also
funny
feel
and
like
cool.
In Jurassic World, which, you know, I liked him in Guardians of the Galaxy fine. Like, I got when they were first being like, he's Harrison Ford, I was like, okay, fine. But in Jurassic World, the way they try to make him Harrison Ford is just by having him be a dick the whole time, and it sucks. Han Solo is, like, charming, and I don't know, like, why is it different when he does it? It just is, you know?
That also, like, the guy who wrote that movie is just, like, one of the biggest hacks in the whole, like, working today, and he keeps getting these huge jobs, and I totally forget his name and what his next thing is, but I think, yeah.
Did you see Passengers?
No, I didn't see Passengers.
Maybe we should all watch Passengers.
I've seen Passengers.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Well,
I mean, the thing. Like, that proves the point is that, like, they're the equivalent of each other, and when they're in the same movie, it just, like, cancels cancel each other out, and
the
it's like a non-entity that nobody
contradict.
Wants to see. Yeah, totally.
Hey, we should take another night call.
Yeah, let's take another night call.
Yes, it looks like we have an email from, we'll call him Joe, and it says, I am needing some help. My wife hates me and I need some attention. What do I need to do? She's into things that I haven't experienced before and I have ruined our marriage. Help.
Wow. That's a real night call.
Yeah, that is a night call in email form for sure. I would like some more detail about the things that she is into that he hasn't experienced. But I feel like no matter what it is, I don't know. I feel like that's an easy kind of thing to get hung up on. I know that I have kind of experienced that kind of stuff before in relationships where it's like the difference of experience, especially like experience that gets weighted a lot, like, you know, drugs or sex or something like that, gets like becomes very big in the other person's mind sometimes.
Joe should talk to his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that Joe, I mean, I think you have to break it down. His wife, okay, his wife hates him. He needs some attention. Well, what do I need to do? She's into things that I haven't experienced before, and I've ruined our marriage. So these are two very separate. So what's an experience gap that's easy to close, right?
If the issue is like my wife's done all the peyote and I haven't done enough
peyote. I like that you go to drugs. I'm assuming he's talking about sex. Is it just easier to talk about the peyote? Right, but then I'm
like, what if the experiences are like she wants to make out with women and that's like something he can't.
But he's made out with women.
But
he's
that, yeah, I think we just have to take this as like an abstract, like difference in experience. I'm assuming that she's been around the block or something in whatever block that may be. She has been around it more.
If she's been around the block and she ended up with you, Joe, though, that means that she doesn't miss the block.
That was an informed choice, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, don't ignore that. And I mean, and don't open by saying that she hates you, because that feels like you then, that's a very self-defeating statement.
You're projecting a bit.
Yeah, maybe you haven't ruined things if she's still your wife.
Yeah.
If you need attention and you feel as though there's an experience gap, probably you need to prepare yourself for for two different outcomes. One being that you should try a new experience together, right, that she's never experienced. Don't laugh, Molly.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking maybe they should watch Mother together.
Well, honestly, I mean, I think you think of something that neither of you has ever done, and you try it together with the knowledge that you're at a very rough place in your relationship, and that will either bring you together or drive you apart. And it could be perceived differently by the two of you. So it doesn't have to be drugs, but
no.
You could. But yeah, you could watch Mother.
Say it couldn't hurt.
How did you know? No, it could hurt. It's not true. You should, and definitely not
just
opiate.
Go skydiving, or if that's.
What about like going to, where have you not been? Portugal. Maybe. Be like, we're going to try and save our marriage. We've never been to Portugal.
We're going to do peyote in Portugal.
We're going to do peyote in Portugal and adopt a porcupine. We're going to do all the peas that we've never done. If it doesn't work out, you know that you tried.
I do recommend going someplace different together.
Yeah.
It's good to get out and be in a new environment with your partner. I would say do something that requires the least logistics possible, because that is a recipe to be screaming at each other, especially if you're in a kind of raw and tender place. Don't go camping, other words. And don't like try to go to a city and like do something where you have to do all this stuff and everything. Like, do something kind of simple and low key, but still unfamiliar.
Yeah, not a staycation. Get out.
Yeah.
But also, you can't ruin a marriage. You can make bad decisions that show you things about yourself and your partner that mean that maybe it's no longer your time to be together. But I don't think you should take the blame on yourself. You've ruined the marriage. Like, you made choices authentic to who you were, probably. And your wife is having an emotional response that's authentic to who she is. So now you just have to figure out if it's an external problem or if it's, you know, an internal problem. But regardless, Joe, you're going to be okay. We got your back, Joe.
Yeah, we're your friends here.
Yeah, good luck, Joe.
We're nightclub buddies.
Yeah.
It was nice of you to reach out.
Yeah, thank you for being vulnerable.
Should we have another night email?
Yeah.
So this one comes from Amanda. Hi, all. Found your podcast from Astonishing Legends today, and I thought I'd pitch you guys a question. Last week, during a late night of knitting, listening to a post-apocalyptic audiobook and drinking wine, I found myself Googling appropriate level of apocalyptic paranoia and pulling out reference books to cuddle with. Google was unable to provide a satisfactory answer. Neither was the wine. Any insights? Thanks, Amanda.
I love this question.
Yeah.
I feel like it really is also maybe directed at Tess, who is my most post-apocalyptic strategy Googling friend, probably.
Well, I am a mother. No, all of us are scared about the apocalypse, right, guys?
Yeah, but I feel like, again, you're the Graysmith. You, like, do the most research into, like, what's the actual plan. Well, I was just saying, I've noticed there's like a strong uptick in leftist preppers. And I watched a documentary once about people who live in their RVs, and they all like clarified that they were like hippies, not preppers. But I think now we're getting more of both.
Yeah. Can I briefly just say that I misinterpreted this question initially to basically be asking our opinion on wine pairings for apocalyptic anxiety.
Well, that's the subject line. I have one too. Well, I would also like to preface by saying that this came up recently. I was at Sundance, and there's a movie directed by Reed Murano. She did like the first three episodes, I think, of Handmaid's Tale. But this movie is called, I Think We're Alone Now. And one of the aspects of it, which I did like, is that it kind of posits that the wine would be one thing that would be great about the apocalypse, because it doesn't go bad. If you're one of the last survivors of the apocalypse and you're just wandering around, like, all the wine is at your disposal, and it's totally fine. And
wine enough at last.
Yeah.
Wine enough at last.
Emily, what's your wine recommendation for the apocalypse?
I mean, I think that you have to go for a red. I would say something earthy, because like something silty and earthy. I had this wine once in Montreal that I feel like, and I wish I could, I took a picture of it and I would bring it up if I had been more prepared. But I feel like it was definitely a French wine, and it was really gritty in a way that I felt like this feels like
cake. Did it taste wine. Like dirt?
Yeah, it literally did taste like dirt, and it was great. And
it tasted
I took a
like
picture of my glass,
like an open grave.
Yeah, yeah.
Tess, what's your apocalypse wine?
I have the high end recommendation is a good Albarino, because I really like Albarinos when I'm like dealing with shit.
This is very Frasier-y also.
It is. It's so Frasier. It's the Frasier minute that goes on. But I have to recommend this cheap one, because part of the deal with weathering the apocalypse is that you don't know how long you'll be stuck inside or wherever you are. So if you happen to be in the room with the wine and a wine corkscrew, then you would want like a lot of it. And so this wine's like $6 at Trader Joe's, and it's the Schloss Biebrich Rosé Sekt. And I'm telling you guys, because it's not the kind of wine that you like sit with and enjoy too much. It's the kind of wine that you could, if you needed to, drink in a panic of just like chugging it, like just get it down. But it's bubbly, so it's also not just like a depressing, astringent thing. A little fruity, pretty dry at the same time.
I feel like if I drank a magnum of bubbly wine really fast, I would throw up so fast.
Well, that maybe you wouldn't, because the worst thing that could possibly happen has already happened, and so you'd be almost anxiety-less about your body, probably. You know what I mean?
It reminds me of the episode of BoJack where there's an earthquake. And
oh, yeah, the apocalypse.
Yeah, Jessica Biel. It's basically the apocalypse. Yeah, Jessica Biel's there, yeah, and they're stuck in they're basically trapped in the house with just like a room full of champagne.
Yeah, that was a great episode that had nothing to do with the rest of the season. Yeah. In a great season.
Yeah.
I mean, it served a plot function, but it was also just like as a standalone. I think about that episode all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It made me like Jessica Biel a lot.
I have to say that I was in a conversation with some friends of mine the other day about what you would do in the event of a nuclear catastrophe. And I had read online that you want to go inside and shower, but not scrub, with a mild soap, and then go underground with as much cement above you as possible. So like a subterranean parking lot would probably be ideal. And then you have to wait for like 48 hours. I think
that's so funny though, because I'm like, when you say subterranean parking lot, my first thought is like, but then what if there's an earthquake?
Right, exactly, which there inevitably probably would be, but it would be retrofitted. But then my neighbor was like, no, you get on a dirt bike right after it happens and you go to Reno. And I was like, but you wouldn't know. You could be driving like right into the mushroom cloud on a dirt bike.
Maybe he thinks that because of the stand, because in the stand.
It was from the stand.
Everybody goes to Las Vegas.
Trash Can Man or whatever his name is.
Okay, well, we're all going to meet at the Atomic Museum in Las Vegas.
Okay, perfect.
When the event happens.
Yeah, and then we'll just we'll redo it like San Junipero, and yeah. Janelle Monáe will be our new president.
We'll hang out in the historic bunker they have there, and we'll drink all of the pink wine. I'm very excited, guys, about Night Call.
Yeah.
Please leave us some night calls at 1-240-46-NIGHT.
Or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
And remember to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review on iTunes Podcast. And you can also follow us on Twitter @nightcallpod and Instagram @nightcallpodcast.